Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is time, 8 o'clock on a Tuesday. This is a petty show all the time, but we really channel our pettiness hardcore at 8 o'clock on Tuesday mornings. Just feels right.
This is where we really lean into all of the worst parts of our personality.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Or the best. Get a lot of compliments on the Pettycast when I'm out about town, Seth. They really enjoy this segment, the people.
Right.
Yep. Let's start with Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick, he's the head coach at North Carolina right now. The University of North Carolina Tar Heels. He's the head football coach there. He does not allow Patriot scouts on campus. This story was making the rounds, and he was asked about it after his game on Saturday.
Can you comment on that and provide some sort of explanation on that?
Yeah, well, no, it's clear that I'm not welcome there around their facility, and so they're not welcome in ours. Pretty simple.
Okay, pretty simple.
Honestly, man, I want to applaud the pettiness, and yet at the same time, man, I don't know if I've ever seen a better example of how some really effective football coaches also have a really good way of basically telling everybody in the organization it's about the team, the team, the team, when really it's actually all about themselves too. Boy, this is such an extreme version of making it all about yourself at the expense of the kids that are, it's to their benefit to be seen by as many scouts as possible, that you'd like your coach to be able to have conversations with scouts about how you're a good kid, all these other things. And recruiters are going to use this against him so effectively.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of times that's oversold, but my God, it's one of the most selfish, egocentrical things I've ever heard. It's unbelievable.
That would be enough for me to tell my kid not to go play there. You know,
This guy clearly doesn't care about the kids.
Right.
He cares about his own ego.
And it's over something stupid like this.
Look, all this stuff with him and his girlfriend or any of the other stuff that goes on, whatever, like, that's okay, whatever. This is something that this actually has to be part of the story of the legacy of Bill Belichick. This is some petty ass.
It's huge petty
stuff. Yeah.
It's huge petty. And this is a head coach whose whole sales pitch to kids is come play for this and basically collegiate NFL program that we have. I mean, that he said that was what he was creating in North Carolina. Now, for what it's worth, Mike Vrabel on his radio show on Monday on WEEI, he does a hit on WEEI, our sister station up in Boston, he refuted what Belichick said. He's allowed in the building.
Is Bill Belichick welcome here? And were you surprised that he didn't allow the scouts onto campus to scout his players?
Again, nothing surprises me. I would imagine that that Bill, I mean, he came back for, the best of my knowledge, Tom's ceremony, so that I would he's welcome back based on the fact that he was there. So I'll just go by that. Since his departure as the head coach here, he's been back, and I'll leave it at that.
And therefore, he is allowed in the building.
I mean, Belichick kind of is pulling a Portnoy here, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, Portnoy, they claimed that Portnoy wasn't allowed in the Ohio State Stadium, but nobody was really sure if that was the case or whatever.
Yep.
Which, I don't know, maybe this does come back to the girlfriend somehow. Hey, you want to get some buzz?
Yeah.
You know, claim you're not allowed somewhere.
Yeah.
Look at what it did for Portnoy.
This Portnoy guy's getting a lot of attention right now.
I do. Honestly, man, I'd love to be petty about this, but I'm starting to get kind of sad about just guys like Urban Meyer or Bill Belichick just making a mockery out of their final act.
Yeah.
Sean, if any other coach had said something like this and he didn't have all the pelts on the wall, I don't know if you couldn't take him seriously.
He'd be laughed out of the building.
You just couldn't take him seriously.
Yep.
It's so selfish. Petty. Good job. He might. I mean, he might be the all-time winner of the Petty Cast.
If we were doing
scenario.
Winners, if there was a Petty yeah. belt that we did, like Take a Mania, he'd be the winner right now. Although this is pretty good. Aaron Rodgers asked after the Steelers, after he engineered a 34-32 win over his former team, the Jets, he was reminded by a media member of his face-to-face meeting with Aaron Glenn, where Aaron Glenn basically told Aaron Rodgers, "We don't want you anymore." Yeah. Here's what this sounded like.
Beating him, is there significance in that, since he basically told you to your face that he didn't think you were right for that team?
Yes, that's what he did.
So there's significance in beating him for you?
I was happy to beat everybody associated with the Jets.
Not quite as petty as Belichick, but you can see the petty swirling.
Yeah, the pettiness here really comes too, because Aaron was treated very much like a diva the entire time he was there, and they kowtowed to everything that Aaron Rodgers wanted, whether it's aging or ineffective wide receivers, whomever it might be, his hand selected offensive coordinator who nobody respects as an offensive coordinator, yep. all of those things, and yet. That is the epitome of pettiness. It still found ways to feel wronged in that situation.
He did.
Yes.
He did.
Good for you, Aaron Rodgers.
Way to go.
You remain petty.
You are.
Yet also, by virtue of, you know, him having gone on all of these spiritual journeys, he's egoless. And it very much inflates his ego to be able to say that he's egoless.
He's egoless, yes. The irony of the whole thing.
He's got so little ego that he's got the largest ego in the room.
Very meta. Yes, for sure. All right, this was yesterday, Steve Sarkisian. If you missed it, Arch Manning had a follow-up to his abysmal effort in his first start of this season. First game, really, as the face of UT football. We know how that went. 7 points in Columbus. Did not look good. Got right against San Jose State. Had a really nice game against San Jose State, but was caught after a couple of plays, kind of wincing after throwing, which has led to speculation that maybe Arch is dealing with a shoulder. That's why his mechanics have been so sloppy. He's dealing with some sort of shoulder issue. Steve Sarkisian was asked about this yesterday. The wincing of Arch Manning on film, is he dealing with something right now?
Arch Manning seemed to be having some throwing pains by the
according to
quarter.
Who?
Arch.
Arch said that to you?
No.
Oh, according to who?
It just looked like he was...
He doesn't have any.
Is there an explanation to why he was... It looked like that.
I don't know. I've never filmed any of you guys when you're using the bathroom, so I don't know what faces you make when you're doing that.
Okay. So that was Sark. Sark with the snark.
I still don't.
Never filmed any of you taking a dump before.
You know, that's where I felt like he went a little too far with the... he went a little too far out there. He's like, I don't know, I've never watched you guys. Maybe you could say, I've never watched you guys, you know, in the weight room or something to see how you look when you're lifting weights. I don't know. Tell me if I'm right on this. So is it like if you're having a bowel movement or something, he doesn't know, like, are your facial expressions telling you whether
maybe you make
a
face, you know, if it's a tough one to squeeze out of there, you know? You're making a face. You know, Arch is just, it's a natural bodily function, him throwing a football the same way it's the natural bodily function for guys like me and you to, you know, do a number two.
What is it about the University of Texas head football coaches that can't stop making the bathroom newsworthy items? You remember Tom Herman's hydration chart?
Yeah, the shades
like
of the urine
today and all that.
Yeah.
I don't know. As a connoisseur of analogies, I'm going to give him, I'm going to give him an A for effort. Okay. I think he was trying to go out there. He was trying to go out there on a limb. I just don't know if he chose
that. Definitely
the right
petty
way.
Though, right? Like, I'm not giving you an answer to Arch's, oh, who told you that? And the guy made the mistake of going, Arch.
You should have seen it like, I don't know, man. I don't like, let's judge your facial expressions on your wife while you have relations with her. How are you grading those? You know, is she having a good time? I don't know.
That would have been a good boy. If Sark did that, that would have made waves.
She making the same faces she does when she's with me? That's what I would have said.
Then there you go. All right. Next one. Let's stay with college football because it's so much fun. This was Alabama fan Susie Connerly walking out of a convenience store, presumably in Alabama, and they were doing one of these news hits where, you know, the Powerball's up to 1.8 billion or something like that. So they're finding randos walking out of the convenience store, and, you know, they do this like once a month. Hey, what are you going to do if you win the money? Well, Susie Connerly, what are you going to do if you win the money in the Powerball?
I'll tell you exactly what I'd do with the first $70 million. I'd pay off Kalen DeBoer and get him the heck out of the University of Alabama, and then I'd take whatever else it took to get rid of the AD. So I'd give him a church money. I don't know how much of what I'd have, you know, after I paid my taxes. But I'm sure I'd have plenty with this kind of deal, but I know I'm not going to win. I just hope I win some scratch-offs. I just do it for the fun.
The buyout's $70 million.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't think she... I hope for her sake she doesn't win the...
What is the Powerball at
It was up over a billion earlier, last week. I don't play it, so I don't know. But it was up over a billion.
She would be fine.
I think she would, too. You know, a billion. So, after taxes, you're down to about 600 milli. Oh, yeah. You'll be fine, man. Tithe to the church, she just said. You know, I got to pay my church. I'm assuming she's a good Christian tither. So, there's another 60 mil.
Mm-hmm.
Do you tithe before taxes or after taxes? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Before taxes.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think it's tax deductible, actually.
Up to a point, yeah.
So Susie Connerly would buy out Kalen. Boy, poor Kalen DeBoer, man. Alabama's 18th in the AP poll right now. And I feel like that is a, if I could pick one program that is going to wind up 7-5 this year, that's in the top 25 right now, the SEC has 11 teams in the top 25 right now. I mean, that's damn near the whole conference is in the top 25.
Do you think DeBoer would actually, or do you think she would actually do that? Do you think she'd actually buy out DeBoer? Would people hold her to that?
She committed to it. It's a verbal contract. She committed to it on TV to all the Alabama fans.
Yeah, once she threw her tithing in with it too, I feel like she would feel morally obligated to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to help this billion-dollar entity reverse a mistake that they made and give my own hard-won cash to them.
Yeah.
Good for her.
It wouldn't just be DeBoer getting out of there. She'd probably have some say-so as to who the next head coach would be.
That's true. You donate that much money, she's going to have a building named
after. That's what I was going to say. They're going to put her name on something on campus, you know?
So yeah.
That might be worth it, man. Immortalize it. And every descendant of hers from now until the end of time will not only get into Alabama, but they will get their choice of dorm. They will get their choice of meal plan. They'll get everything, man.
Yeah. She buys herself immortality.
Immortality.
Which in reality, at best, is like 1,000 years and probably less. But yeah, immortality or whatever fantasy you pretend to believe. Yeah.
All right, let's skip down. Let's go to Bill Burr, Ben, because Bill Burr is funny. He was on the Rich Eisen show. And speaking of Belichick again, Belichick works his way back into the petty cast. The first thing Rich Eisen brings up with Bill Burr, noted Chowd, noted Bostonian, big Patriots fan, was, hey, check out Bill Belichick's debut at the University of North Carolina.
Anyway, let's get into it,
let's
man.
Let's get into what he couldn't even wait until I came out here. Go ahead and ask me.
What'd you think of Bill Belichick's first game as head coach of North Carolina?
What'd you think of Joe Namath on the Rams? What'd you think of Johnny Unitas on the Chargers? What happened to that guy? What do you think of Lewis Hamilton driving a Ford Pinto? Since when is the University of North Carolina even in the conversation of a college football powerhouse?
Not at all.
Exactly.
And still not right now.
Exactly. He's driving a you know, a mid-sized car, and he's going to try to, you know, he's got some curb finders on it. Can he have more than one game? Oh, look at that. Look at the look, you know, that look on his face. Like, you guys, all this says to me is how much it bothered you that for 20 years, you couldn't even enjoy the greatest NFL head coach of all time. Yeah. Did you see him lose the first game?
Here's where I'm petty towards Bill Burr, and I like Bill Burr. I think he's really funny. Yeah, not many of us were enjoying that. The Patriots dominating. You couldn't even enjoy the greatest head coach of all time. No, because I didn't like the team he coached. Yeah,
people hated it. Right. Yeah. I'm not delighting in it or anything, but it's to act like it's not a story. Yeah. And Burr's 100% correct. It depends on how bad it goes at UNC. Because Urban Meyer, you could say, well, who's really going to remember that he was with the Jaguars? I don't know, man. It was so bad with the Jaguars, and because it became such a circus, that I think they are going to bring it up. It's going to be brought up for a long time with Urban Meyer, depending on which circles you're in. If Belichick, by way of being on the petty cast, just a few minutes ago. I don't know. This could end up, if he keeps spiraling out of control, hey, they beat Charlotte 20-3. They picked themselves up the mat and then beat Charlotte. I don't know. I think this is, it's going to be a more considerable footnote to his career than, say, Joe Namath with the Rams or other kind of, who Jerry Rice with the Seahawks or whatever it might be.
Yep. You know what I'm petty about? And petty in terms of, like, I'm really happy this happened. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, Seth, I just saw this story. This story just dropped late yesterday. Has refused four trademark applications filed by Bill Belichick and his companion, Jordan Hudson, saying the phrases they attempted to trademark would cause a likelihood of confusion with previously filed ones. So we know that the Patriots hold the trademark rights to do your job, ignore the noise, the Belichrader, and no days off.
Yeah.
The Patriots own the rights to those phrases.
Yeah.
Jordan Hudson, the manager of TCE Rights Management, filed to secure several trademarks, including these four. Do your job, Bill's version. Ignore the noise, Bill's version. The Belichrader, Bill's version. No days off, Bill's version. I take away from this that Jordan Hudson is a Swiftie. That's my...
So for those of you who don't know, that's how Taylor Swift got back control of her cat. She had sold her catalog and ended up just wanted to gain back control. So she re-recorded all of the music. And because Taylor of a Swift. Tweak in the contract that she'd had, she was able to basically... take back possession of a brand new catalog. So that's what he's doing.
By putting Taylor's version after each of the songs.
Yeah, by putting Taylor's version at the end of it.
Yeah.
So this will be, I don't like seeing him go out like this. I have a hard time. Are you feeling petty about watching him go out like this?
I love watching
him
go out like this.
You do.
The shot on the sidelines from the game that he lost, what, the TCU game? Where the Tar Heels are warming up before the game, and she's down there on the sidelines, like clearly it looked like irking him down there.
And he walked out. It looked like he could not get far enough out onto that football field to get away from whatever she was talking to him about.
Is this worth it?
You know what it is? You know what it is? I guess there's a part of it. It's like, man, I hope when I get to that age, I don't want to act that way. I don't know. That's the part where I have a hard time leaning into the pettiness. The guy's done some incredible things in his life, and now he's just turning it into a clown show in a lot of ways.
I know. It's awesome.
And you love it.
I love
good for you. You're so much better at this than I am. I'm so weak. I'm going to give me a pep talk next week.
Okay.
Days leading up to the pettycast.
A petty pep talk. Yes.
I failed the pettycast. I apologize to everybody.
You're good. All right, there's your petty cast. Text in your petty. Someone texted in, fun fact, hashtag, there's a hashtag petty cast. Laremy Tunsil had zero penalties. Not true. He had a holding penalty on a play that he allowed a sack. So they may have declined
it.
Yeah.
He does that. And also, this is the other thing. He had the opposite of a false start. He had a play in which the center snapped the ball. Three other offensive linemen started pass protecting. Laremy Tunsil stayed in his stance.
He was making sure he was not going to get a false start.
And I got to go back and look for the quotes after the game. Because if I know Laremy Tunsil, you know whose fault it was?
Center.
It was the center.
Center.
Even though four other guys knew what the snap count was, somehow it's going to be the center's fault.
Oh, yeah. God, I'm so glad he's not here. All right. But
he didn't have a great game, and it was versus. I mean, the Giants have some good pass rushers, but we'll see. I mean, I'm like, the Commanders beat the Giants. Huge shocker, right there. We'll see how it goes.
Is CJ Stroud starting to let his frustration show a little bit? I've got some numbers that might back up why he's frustrated and why Texan fans are a little frustrated. We'll get to that coming up next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It was an interesting post-game press conference for C.J. Stroud on Sunday. He said some things, kind of veered into some areas that we haven't seen before. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? We'll see. Here was C.J. Stroud just talking about the effort in the game against the Rams. Take a listen, especially at the very end, about him talking about the team going through the motions.
Yeah, I take just negative plays. I think it's kind of obvious. You know, we can't shoot ourselves in the foot consistently and expect to win. And that starts with me, you know, with a lot of different things. I got to get rid of the ball better and, you know, use my legs maybe a little more. But, yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of hope still. We did a lot of good things. You know, it's a really good defense, it's a really good team. But I definitely think we could have won. But just you can shoulda, woulda, coulda all day. We didn't deserve to win that game because we didn't do the right things. So when you come out in NFL lollygagging and you know not going through the motions, that kind of happens. So I think we'll be all right. But I think it's a good wake up call for us.
That's kind of a damning thing, man. When you consider all the things that you can look at on the box score that said that the team didn't come out ready to play, 11 penalties.
Yeah,
you know, didn't score any touchdowns. You know, didn't score in the second half of this game. To then label it with lollygagging and going through the motions.
I'll tell you what, you know, at the risk of reading too much into comments in the media or whatever, I think there's some things about that team that I think they entered the game somehow after you know not having accomplished really. Genuinely much of anything in the last couple of years, kind of a little on a high horse. And, you know, Kalen Bullock is in his second year in the NFL, had a promising rookie season, but he's not a made man yet. And he's flat out saying we're the best secondary in the NFL. I'll tell you what, you weren't yesterday or that weekend. Like, the defense did a good effort. Now, look, the defense played a winning effort and everything, but the secondary really got duped pretty badly a few times.
Yes. Like
some of the things that were your downfall last year and why you weren't a genuinely elite top tier defense last year, it showed up in that game. So I don't need second year safeties talking about how they're the best secondary in the NFL.
Right.
I don't, you know, and likewise on offense. All right, great. They looked good against the Panthers last year, the worst defense in the NFL, the worst scoring defense in the history of the NFL. And they looked good in the preseason for one series. Didn't look good in the first series in that game. That I don't know if there's, I don't think CJ would have the sense of complacency. But I'll be honest with you, Sean. I don't know what's going on in the mind of Titus Howard and CJ Stroud when they somehow think they gotta tell D'Amico we need to go for it on 4th and 1 from our own 25-yard line in the fourth quarter.
Are we assuming that's what that was?
That's what Jonathan Alexander. That's how he reported.
He did.
It.
Okay.
They were trying.
Okay.
They were urging when you saw Titus Howard yell. I don't want to say. You know, like guys are yelling on football fields a lot.
Sure.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's an awful thing, but that Titus Howard was yelling at D'Amico Ryans on the TV copy that it was him telling him he needed to go for it. What makes you guys think that you have the right to put the defense in that position after what you've been doing the rest of that game? Like, where do you get off thinking that you can tell D'Amico Ryans, no, we need to go for this? Where the hell, like, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, hey, if you ask you, do you guys feel confident or whatever, fine. You're telling D'Amico Ryans that we need to go for it here and put the defense in that position?
Yep.
Come on.
And
you guys haven't done anything.
And just for context, it was 4th and 1. There were 9.5 minutes to go in regulation.
Yep.
This was their second to last possession. The Texans are trailing 14-9. It was 4th and 1 at their own 26-yard line.
Right. Yeah.
4th and 1 at their. I don't know if the audience knew that, like the exact.
Yeah,
like,
I had said that.
You
yeah.
said it was 26-yard line. Yeah.
Yeah, I said 25, but yeah. Whatever. It's like that's a part where it'd be good. I'm glad they got slapped around a little bit. I think the Rams might end up being a really good football team. I think because I know immediately after the game, I admire the confidence of people who, after one game, can say, "Oh, that this team's going to win 8 games at best." Blah, blah, blah. All right, great. Like we don't have to. We could sit here all day talking about teams that have gotten destroyed in the first game of a season or early in a season. The Patriots have done it at least twice when they got destroyed by the Chiefs. They got destroyed by the Lions. You got to be careful reading too much into it. We also just don't know how good a team the Rams are. But the offense. they needed to have whatever they thought they were going to get by CJ having more command or control at the line of scrimmage. Like, you guys aren't there yet. You got slapped around to an extreme degree. So for CJ to say that they were lollygagging or whatever, that's how I read into it. I wouldn't be reading into it like this other than CJ got up and said that they were lollygagging and going through the motions.
Yeah. Here's one more from CJ saying they did not practice well enough during the week.
I just think the way we practiced this week, I think we could have practiced better. I think, you know, I love the confidence we have, but there's a, I don't know, I always say there's like a type of mindset is like, did I do enough? And I think that's a healthy way to be, because then you'll probably do more. So I just, for me, you know, preparing, I got to do a better job. And I also got to hold my guys accountable, you know, for that one exotic look. And it's the first game of the year. We got a lot of exotic looks we did not expect. They did too, but they made the play. So you can come up with a million excuses. We got to just be better.
Didn't practice well enough. Lollygagging, going through the motions. And this is where I don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill, but these are comments. We haven't seen CJ stray into this type of commentary before. And granted, it's with a tone that is it's a calm tone. He's including himself in this. So this isn't him necessarily pointing fingers at everybody, but not pointing them at the guy in the mirror. But since their 6-2 start last season, CJ's numbers are as follows. This is in the regular season.
In the regular season, yeah.
In the regular season. 4-6 in his last 10 games, 9 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, a completion percentage just over 60%, and a 78.1% or a 78.1 passer rating. And you can take passer rating however you want to. For me, any stat that's on an extreme end, one extreme or the other, it's pretty indicative of something. For some context, Mac Jones was the 34th highest passer rating in the NFL last year at 80.2. CJ Stroud over the last 10 games has performed by passer rating worse than Mac Jones over the course of the entire season last year. Mac Jones was the backup in Jacksonville last season. So it's not been a good last 10 games. And you know me, Seth, I'm always thinking ahead to after the season's over, big picture. And I think CJ Stroud's going to be here for a long, long time. But I don't want to ignore the fact that this is a long stretch now in the regular season of very mediocre play. And is it all his fault? Of course not. We all know what the pressure rates are. There's a reason they swapped out 80% of the offensive line. It's not all CJ's fault. I do wonder if this is how it continues. If he's just one of these guys that statistically is as many interceptions as you got touchdowns, not scoring in the second half. It's an offense that's 20th in the league in scoring or whatever it is. Does either side, CJ or the Texans, flinch in the offseason when it comes to agreeing to something long-term?
I think if you talk about everything that CJ was talking about right there as far as lollygagging or going through the motions, the very first series is, as you had pointed out earlier, Damian Pierce lets the ball go into the end zone, which means it's a touchback at the 20 instead of the 35.
Rolls
so
in.
You have that. Yeah. You start right off the bat 15 yards in the hole because I don't know if Damian Pierce understands the rules. I don't know if Damian Pierce understands the rules of pass protection. We talked about that earlier. Damian Pierce, I'm really, really getting to the point where I don't. This is where I was during training camp last year, and I was willing to say, okay, maybe they felt like Damian Pierce had upside, but that, you know, it wasn't a good fit with Bobby Slowick or whatever. Man, that game was not a good look for Damian Pierce. Dropping the ball on the final drive for the Texans, I don't get it. I didn't get it during training camp last year. I don't get it now. But you have that mistake, then they get the holding penalty. They're at 2nd and 17. They get a delay of game. That knocks it to 3rd and 22nd. Like, it was mistake after mistake after mistake on the opening drive. And then you have various other 3rd and longs in that game that are partly because of pre-snap penalties or penalties. It was everything that was sloppy last year was sloppy in week one. And there's room and there's time to get better at it, but I could see where CJ's frustration would come from. Like, man, because he said it himself, he defended Nick Haley in the press conference by saying, we really couldn't get to a lot of what Nick Haley wanted to do because we were so far in a hole because of self-inflicted wounds at times.
Yeah,
including, and see, some of those self-inflicted wounds were CJ's fault. And one of the sacks he took was his fault. There were another couple dodgy pass protections that I think may have been because CJ was unaware of exactly what was going on and he was fooled before. But then also you had, Titus Howard, Ross Tucker brought it up earlier. on one of those sacks, I don't know what Titus Howard was thinking. It didn't look like he was executing the protection the way it's supposed to be executed. And Jake Andrews ends up, or whoever the center was at the end of the at the time, ends up looking like he's the guy that screwed up when Titus Howard, your leader on the offensive line, was just simply doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Unless they had some kind of funky rule in pass protection that I don't know about.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm making too much of it right now, but I think in this day and age in the NFL, it's worth monitoring. Like, man, if this is an offense that slogs its way through the year, you know, who flinches in this relationship? Does either side? You know, maybe both sides have a big picture view on this thing. And we've been through this quarterback thing before, man. And I got a long memory when it comes to stuff like that. I do not have a short memory. We've been down this road with quarterbacks before. All right. Hopefully it's a long, long time that CJ's here. Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, Monday Night Football last night. How did the way Monday Night Football played, two teams that spent huge on the offensive line this offseason, how does last night's game make us feel about the Texans' approach to their offensive line? We will power rank the power rankings at the top of the hour as well. Busy, busy show. Stay there.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Monday Night Football next week. Texans in the early game, Chargers Raiders in the late game. That's going to be weird doing a post-game show of a Monday night game with an entire game going on at the same time. It's going to be strange. It's not one of those doubleheaders where the games overlap for the most part. It's a back-to-backer. So the Texans get an early one this coming Monday, 6 o'clock, and then when they go to Seattle in Week 7, buckle up. 9 o'clock start for that one in Week 7.
9 o'clock Central Time. How often does that...
Oof. Yeah.
I don't like that at all.
Yeah.
I don't like you doing the post-game show after that.
I'm just going to stay up. It's the following day that you're going to get the worst version. Like the day,
I know.
Like,
I don't worry about... Yeah, no, that's what I'm worried about. Yeah. You're just not going to go to sleep at all?
No, because...
You'll be done at like probably 3:30 a.m.
Probably three-ish. And then I'll be up here. I'll be at the studios. So yeah. I'll just go to a couch somewhere and get in a couple hour nap. I'll be okay the Tuesday. It's the Wednesday when it all catches up to you. Like you're still running on adrenaline the next day. It hits you at some point. So we'll figure it out. We'll be okay. Monday Night Football last night. Two teams that spent heavy on offensive line in the offseason. The Vikings, I don't know if a lot of people realize how much they spent here in Houston. I feel like the Bears, everybody here knows how much the Bears spent because Caleb Williams dealt with a lot of the same things C.J. Stroud did last year. And some of it's self-inflicted, but those were the number one and two guys getting sacked last year among quarterbacks. Caleb Williams, number one, C.J. Stroud, number two. And then the Bears traded for Joe Tooney, gave him a big deal, signed Dahlman, the center from Atlanta, gave him a big deal, traded for Jonah Jackson from the Rams, who had been given a big deal by the Rams, traded for him. They had invested high draft capital in a tackle the year before that. And meanwhile, you got the Texans who are signing Laken Tomlinson, a journeyman, Jake Andrews, who had one start in his career, is going to be their center. Right guard depends on the day of the week. Either Titus Howard's getting moved over there, Ed Ingram, a guy they traded a sixth for.
Yeah.
It's just there was a very different approach between these two teams. One week in, they're both 0-1, and the Bears' offensive line looked like a train wreck in the second half of that game yesterday.
In the fourth quarter, I was just going through and watching the fourth quarter plays, and my God, it was so many. There were just so many guys getting manhandled.
Yeah.
Manhandled. It wasn't just like it was a miscommunication or a guy lost a down or anything. They were having the offensive linemen get manhandled in that game. This is where I still, without drawing conclusions based on one game, the thing that this is what you get when you spend on free agents. You're always, by definition, you're overpaying in free agency because you're the highest bidder. So usually, you're paying above market value because you are setting the market. So you got to be careful in how heavily you go into it. The problem, and we saw this in week one already, is that at the very least, though, by virtue of paying for a couple of guys that are at least solid and stable and like just adequate offensive linemen in the NFL, you can have better depth with guys like Jake Andrews, perhaps, or a guy like Ed Ingram, for say, could be your backup guard instead of now when Jake Andrews goes down, you got like, okay, he's a guy that hasn't actually even really made it on an NFL team yet. He's down, so your backup is a guy who couldn't beat out Jake Andrews.
Beat him, yeah.
You know, Ed Ingram goes down, and you don't even trust your backup guard to go in the game. So you'd rather have Titus Howard play guard and have have a rookie play right tackle. I think you can add depth to your offensive line for those injuries that inevitably happen. And we saw that in week one. Wow. Yeah, we knew the Texans had a lot of question marks on the offensive line, but it gets amplified to an extreme degree when you get a couple of injuries on that questionable offensive line.
Yeah, for sure. The Bears were allowing pressure all game long. I just looked up. They had, at halftime of this game, the Bears were winning at halftime. They had still pressured Caleb Williams 40% of the time. He was just able to squeeze out of trouble. He hadn't gotten sacked, but he'd been dealing with a lot of pressure. They got to him in the second half of this game, and he had a lot of bad throws in this game. Nobody had a higher rate of missed should have been completions than Caleb Williams. He had 29.6% of his passes were completions he should have had that he threw poorly in that game.
Yeah, I think where I'd give Caleb Williams a pass a little bit just based on week one was A, that it's a new offense for everybody, and then B, that you are going against the Vikings and Brian Flores, who has an ability to turn quarterbacks' brains into mush.
Blitz.
Right.
Blitz.
So, yeah, or not even blitz, even it's just the way he's really, really good at disguising everything.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily even when he's blitzing, it's just that he confuses quarterbacks, same way he confused CJ last year, that you gotta pump the brakes on making an overall assessment of how good the offensive line or the quarterback's going to be when they face a defensive coordinator who's had time to scheme the entire offseason for you. That it's let's not jump to conclusions, good or bad, necessarily.
So a little like the Texans, I guess, in a way, right? You know,
yeah.
It's the Rams. It's
right. I think there's a tendency, too, to you look at for the people who are really, really distraught and say, oh, now you can tell the Texans aren't going to win more than six games this year. I think you gotta remember, we don't know what the Rams are as a football team yet. I think there's a chance they end up being a really good football team if Matt Stafford stays healthy.
Yeah.
I think Puka Nacua is a really good receiver. I think Devontae Adams still has a lot in the tank. So, and I think that defense is going to be better than they were last year when they were doing some promising things. So, I think the tendency is to go based off of last year's power rankings. Like, oh no, you're struggling to beat or score points against a team that's a slightly above the middle of the pack team. I don't know. We don't know who the Rams are yet.
Yep.
So we'll see.
I'm going to read this text, and I want to read this because you were there for this as a player. This goes back to talking about C.J. Stroud in the previous segment and how, you know, he's getting beat up. You know, he's saying things about maybe we didn't practice well, lollygagging, et cetera, et cetera. Texter says this: I'm worried that the Texans have a David Carr issue happening and the coaching staff is doing exactly what they did back then. This is what happens when you don't protect the quarterback. You were there for David Carr's rookie year when he was sacked 76 times. Are you worried? Are you worried at all that this situation with the Texans is analogous to that situation?
I guess I don't know what he means by the coaching staff is doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily understand what that means. I think with David Carr in his rookie year, at least, the very first game, the Texans started six rookies on offense. Now you go to, so maybe this is what he's talking about. You go to yesterday or this week, and it wasn't the first game for CJ Stroud. It's his third season, but he's on an offense that's starting, that's at least relying heavily on Jaden Higgins. It's relying on Jalen Noel, that has Ariante Ursary flip-flopping from left to right and then back to left and then back to right in the
Woody
course
Marks,
of 1 week.
People saying that Woody Marks should be out here playing too. Yeah.
Right. But Woody Marks isn't at least starting, so you expect some rookies to play.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of rookies out there, and that it's not an excuse. It's not as severe as with David Carr, because with David Carr on that offense in the first couple of years, they only had a few bona fide NFL players on offense. Mm-hmm. You know, it was I don't want to leave anybody out, but I mean Steve McKinney is the only guy that jumps out at my mind on the offensive line that was actually a bona fide NFL starter on the offense. So I don't think it's I don't think the cupboard is as bare as it was early in CJ Stroud's career in David Carr's career. And then I also think that look, David Carr is wired differently than CJ Stroud.
Like CJ
Stroud is a more talented quarterback, and I think CJ Stroud is more mature in terms of his understanding of the preparation that goes into it. Like, let's not pretend that David Carr could have been an awesome quarterback if only he had gone to another team. I don't think David Carr was probably meant to be a great quarterback in the NFL, but he was also thrown into a situation where they weren't going to get the best out of him.
I don't want to speak for this texter, Seth, but were I to share the same view as this texter, you did a much better job talking me off the ledge than Ken Rosenthal did earlier in the show with the Astros.
Oh, okay.
You
good.
Did.
Okay.
I feel better.
So I could have a column in The Athletic.
I think if I were this texter, I would feel better about my thought that David Carr and CJ Stroud are the same guy now.
Look, and this is the other thing. And I've cautioned myself against this the entire offseason. I cautioned our dear listeners about this. Mm-hmm. As CJ has been asked question after question after question about having more control at the line of scrimmage, CJ himself has said, hey, there'll be some, I can't remember the verbiage he used, but I say hiccups. Like, when you're asking the quarterback to do things that are a lot more involved and a lot more complicated pre-snap, it's a lot of plates you've got spinning at one time, and it's not always really, really smooth at the beginning. It can be kind of uncomfortable. And I know he did it in high school. I know he did it in college. It's not the same thing. Like, honestly, I'm sitting here trying to figure out where CJ Stroud setting protection in high school somehow gets him ready for the NFL, doing it in the NFL. I'm trying to figure out where the disconnect is here. Like, the fact that he's done it before, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, saying, I've made out with girls a couple times. I'm ready for an adult film set.
Yeah.
Like, no, there's a whole lot more that goes into it when you're doing it professionally.
He's pointing out the mic. It doesn't count if the mic is shorter than 5'10", okay? That's just, doesn't count.
It's just a completely different thing, man. So there's going to be some hiccups along the way. It's not going to be an entirely smooth process.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, by the way, congrats to Steven here in Houston who won the tickets earlier in the show to the Texans and the Buccaneers on Monday night. He won Texans Ticket Tuesday. You've got two more chances to win Texans Ticket Tuesday, noon hour, 5 o'clock hour today, to be in the bullpen for the Texans and the Bucs on Monday Night Football. All right, let's do it. Power rank the power rankings. What are the experts saying? What are they thinking about the Texans after an 0-1 start in Los Angeles? That is next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.